The Me Too movement has a lot of people asking a lot of different questions, and I've had a lot of questions, so I called a man that I hoped would have some answers and some insight. Ed Heisler joins us this morning. He's the executive director of Men as Peacemakers. Ed, good morning. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, I had identified myself once before as a Me Too, and for the purposes of our conversation this morning, I want to talk to you about some acts of harassment, inappropriate sorts of behavior. But what I'm asking about specifically is not instances where people have used power to coerce someone, have threatened their lives or their jobs, or actual instances of rape. That's a different conversation in my mind. I was just talking about some, you know, inappropriate behavior. I don't exactly know how to characterize it, but I mentioned a situation where I was in an elevator and a colleague who was my father's age grabbed me and kissed me. And I've been wondering about that all these years. What did he exactly, what was going through his head, and what did he exactly think was going to happen in that instance? And sometimes you hear about, you know, inappropriate comments or groping or something, and you wonder, at least a woman certainly does, what were you thinking and what did you really think was going to be the response to this action? And Ed, you talk with a lot of different people and you've got some insights and at least some things that people have told you. Tell us more.
Yeah, well, it's a really interesting and good question, Lisa, and I imagine that so many women who have experienced moments that are now being called Me Too moments, where there's harassment or harm, discomfort of some sort, end up thinking something similar. And I think, you know, it is hard to, you can't actually determine what any one person is thinking, but there are some common denominators that sort of exist in the equation. I think the first thing to remember is to take a bunch of steps way back and sort of ask the question, what is it that would cause somebody to grow up into an adult who behaves in the sort of way where they would make somebody uncomfortable, feel disrespected, unsafe, that kind of stuff. There's something that's going on in our communities that's shaping people, and men in particular in this case, in ways that is different than what is our human potential. We aren't born to treat people in those ways of disrespect. And so I think that, you know, there's a conversation to have around the potential of Me Too moments for men to really step forward and embrace equality and safety and things like that as well. But what we know at Men as Peacemakers is that, unfortunately, in our communities we have what we call a collective socialization of manhood. There's socialization that happens to us, and commonly, the way that we respond to this is different, but commonly we're taught in a bunch of different ways that women's value comes mostly from their bodies, that they're degraded, so they're less than. You run like a girl, you throw like a girl, you think like a girl, you act like a girl, and that they're exploitable as well. And so some of the ways that shows up is when you talk about a situation like what you were in the elevator, sometimes folks are literally thinking, you know, this person has got less value than me. It's just a woman. They get some pleasure from putting women in uncomfortable positions, from sort of exerting some control over them. In other cases, what's actually going on can be a little bit more sinister. There's ways that, like, propositions and sexual assault can be set up through behaviors like that. So it's a way of testing boundaries, and some of the thinking is, well, maybe it'll just go smoothly. Maybe she's interested in me, and if she's not, I'll get a sense of how strong her boundaries are, or what her reactions to me might be. That can be used to take advantage of later. And other times, it's as simple as, you know, men have been taught that the way that you show interest and express sexual desire in women is by being forceful and taking control. And all of them end up with an uncomfortable, sometimes dangerous, disrespectful situation. But they come from thinking and beliefs around who men are and who women are and what sex is that's not healthy and serving us very well.
Well, and as you look at popular movies, as you look at romantic fiction, which at one point in my life I read a whole bunch of, and I've and been interesting to note how it is evolving, this whole idea, like you say, of a boy, you know, I mean, we're taught in real life when we're little kids, you know, oh, he punched you in the arm. Oh, that means he likes you. Mm-hmm. So we're already being conditioned in many instances to accept inappropriate behavior as evidence of affection, and we're supposed to translate that mentally into, oh, he really likes me, and then we wonder why we grow up and pick partners that hit us. It's movies and frequently and a certain kinds of literature teach men and women that no really means yes, and that if you force the issue enough, you know, suddenly she'll fall madly in love with you or something. And are those messages playing into these Me Too situations also?
Yeah, that's a great point. It's sort of amazing to think back, you know, think about all the messages that young people are getting, whether it's from those books or the media or the internet. You know, most young people are learning about sex from internet pornography these days. Another example of places where these messages come from, and as you identified, no means try harder is it's a way of saying that what matters if you're a heterosexual man with women is getting to yes, or sort of having a conquest, you know, being successful at having sex, rather than thinking about it through the lens of, you know, I really like this person. What does she need? What does she want? What's going to be good for her? How do I make sure that she's comfortable? And that's sort of what I mean by ways in which the community has to do better at connecting boys with their full human potential, because through our media, through our modeling, sometimes what we're giving them is a counterproductive message about what it means to be a man and what sexuality is.
As I mentioned, I really had wondered, you know, about these couple of instances in my professional life as a young reporter in the business, and I really kind of wondered what was going on there. But when I hear companies now responding to Me Too allegations about employees, and they say, well, we're going to be stepping up our sexual harassment training and our sexual harassment policies, I have to confess, I'm rolling my eyes. I've sat through meetings with people who have snickered like junior high school kids through presentations like that. And I also have to wonder, does a man really have to be told in a seminar that grabbing a coworker and kissing her in an elevator is inappropriate? I mean, don't you think they already know that's a bad idea?
That's also a really good question, and I would tend to agree with you that that the vast majority of men who are behaving this way in work and professional settings at this point, you know it's something that is disrespectful and you know, not okay from the perspective of others. They might have their own justifications for it. What can be useful about those types of trainings is, it's a way of establishing the baseline and the expectations of holding people accountable to those rules for safety. And also, I mean, my hope and our hope at Men as Peacemakers is always that these trainings are not just about this is what's okay and this is what's not okay and this is what's legal and this is what's not legal. We also think that if you're a business or a workplace that cares about productivity, that cares about your bottom line, that you also care about creating a culture where everybody can thrive and achieve their fullest potential. And so that means speaking to men in particular, but women, people of all gender identities, you know, about what role can we play in making sure that this is a place where everybody feels safe, and more than just safe, also like supported to achieve the things that they are capable of achieving for this company or this place.
So what is really going to make a difference? What is really going to change a culture, whether it is a workplace culture or whether it is a culture that somehow encourages men to behave this way? I mean, I'm thinking about this gentleman, and I'm thinking, you know, he didn't sit around at the dinner table with his wife and his family and say, oh, yeah, you know, I grabbed the new reporter and kissed her in the elevator today. I mean, so it's like this is somehow a secret kind of thing that you're not going to share with people, and yet somehow it happens anyway, even though they know it's something that they shouldn't talk about. What kind of pressure, if men don't want to talk about this and they don't want to admit or whatever that this is the way they're behaving, what's going to really make a substantive change?
Well, there's a couple of things that I think are making substantive changes. And the first is, I mean, the Me Too movement itself is something that is a shift. It used to be, and still is for many people, that when you experience harm, whether it's on the scale from harassment all the way to sexual assault, that speaking up about it was something that was dismissed. It could be dangerous. It could cost you your job. It could, you know, cost you your support in your family, those sorts of things. And I think one of the things that is really useful with Me Too is the way that we're modeling and showing what it means to listen and believe. And I think that we've got some work to do when you think about folks who reside more on the margins, communities of color. You think about domestic, you know, workers, folks who work in the service industry, things like that, where we know that harassment and abuse is rampant as well. Their voices aren't shaping the way that we're thinking about this yet, and we have a duty to listen in a different way, I think. So that is contributing, but we've got to get past the place where it's just normal to hear about Me Too movements. We actually want to create the conditions where the Me Too moments stop. And I think that, you know, there's a place for policy and laws and the legal side of things, but ultimately it is something that's going to come down to men's ability, and men have the ability to listen with empathy and respond in ways where they model and are practicing accountability to women in new and different ways. And that can sound kind of stuffy and boring, but it's actually kind of a joyful, fun thing, like actually being proactive about being in women's lives in ways that help build them up and support them. And the vast majority of men are men who are doing that to begin with. The question is, how can we play a bigger role in making sure that, you know, in our sports clubs, in our religious institutions, in the athletic teams that we are volunteer coaches of, you know, in the classes that we teach, in all of these places, that what we're doing is we're setting a new standard of what it means to be a man that includes really, really valuing and holding up the well-being of women and girls as well.
And that's going to be a real change because, as you mentioned, a lot of things that have to do with women are really negative for men. Like you had mentioned, you know, you throw like a girl, you know, you know, are you a sissy, blah, blah, that sort of thing. And so the whole idea of a, you know, perhaps a man who listens to women with a certain group of men, he's suspect right there. There's something the matter with him.
Yep. And I think that's, as you were in your last two comments, I was thinking, you know, it may be that men aren't talking about what they did around a dinner table with their family, but unfortunately it can be common for some men to brag and boast about that stuff with one another. But I think that one of the things that's really, really hopeful and important to remember is that, you know, there are, when we look at statistics around, you know, women experiencing violence at rates of 1 in 3, for instance, it means that there are a lot of men who are perpetrating really bad behavior. But then when we look around in our communities, we also see that there's actually a majority of men who care, who are trying to raise sons, daughters, people of all gender identities to be respectful and equal, who treat their partners with respect. And, you know, a lot of times those are the men. I mean, we got to do something to help men who are causing harm stop causing harm. But it's actually the men who want to see a more equal world, who are practicing caring in their personal lives, that I'm really interested in what we can do together to model and create the conditions where you can't just fit in by treating women with disrespect or putting them in dangerous situations.
So that instead of the, you know, the old boys club and the guy that's harassing and part of the group of guys, that's the guy that's going to be on the outside looking mm-hmm. in until his behavior changes. So it's peer pressure, kind of.
Right. And, you know, in the if you want to get, like, when I think about it from the big picture, it is more in alignment with who we, what our potential is as human beings than the behavior that's causing harm and violence and disrespect. So there is, I think, a lot of hope, and I think that the Me Too movement and the Me Too moments and folks like you who are raising these questions and sharing stories are creating really soft ground for there to be a cultural shift that includes men as well.
Well, Ed, pardon me, this is a fascinating discussion, and thank you so much for coming on the air this morning and just deep diving right in. I really appreciate it. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you, too.
Ed Heisler is the executive director of Men as Peacemakers.